What the Tech is brought to you by TextExpander. TextExpander helps you communicate smarter. Visit TextExpander.com/podcast for 20% off your first year. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarian. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theriot. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good. How are you?
Oh, man. We did not do a show last week. I separated my shoulder. Not that you could tell by me not wearing my sling that I'm supposed to, but I separated my shoulder from my clavicle, and I tore a bunch of ligaments in my shoulder. If I were to tell you I'm at like a 6 in pain right now, I'm at a 6 in pain. I'm just dealing with it. So we decided not to do a show last week. I had 800 things going on. And I sent you the video, right, Paul?
Yep.
I look like a fool.
It's not the heroic endeavor I was imagining.
I was racing children.
Yep.
And losing, might I add. I was losing, and I went face first, and I decided, rather than trying to embarrassing myself and falling face first, I'm going to do a ninja roll and pretend I meant to do it. Mm. And I did a roll, and I rolled on my shoulder, and I separated my shoulder. Who's the fool now?
Yep. Middle age does not come gracefully, Andrew.
Oh, man. I'm having a very difficult time with middle age at this point. I bought a sports car. I have this ridiculous haircut now. This is what I'm doing.
If I was there and had lawn clippers, I would solve that problem.
Here, look at this. Hold on.
Oh boy.
Look at this. I mean, is this a normal? This is not what a normal person does. I've totally lost control of my life. But at least, Paul, you're here to bring stability back to my life at this point.
Well, you picked the right person. I have an alcohol problem.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cry for help, said Chris in our chat room.
Exactly.
Yes, it is.
Exactly.
There is a lot to talk about. Yeah, there's a ton to talk about here. We did not do a show last week, and the iPhone got released, and there's a whole lot of other news, obviously, that I wanted to go over with you because there's so much going on. And we're doing an ad-free show today.
Wow.
There's no ads today, unfortunately. Not because we're trying to be very
hold on,
nice.
Let me get some Kahlua for my coffee then.
Yes, please. You go get it because there's no ads today. But if you enjoy the show, you can support us by funding us on Patreon, patreon.com/whatthetech. You can go there, fund us as little as $1 per episode. Helps us. It goes a long way. Also, Theriot Premium. Go to Theriot.com. Sign up for all. Let me see. Let me load this up. Upgrade to premium. You can sign up there. You get 35 years of trusted voice of tech. 35 plus years.
Oh, that must be like my 25 plus years and then
Brad's 10.
Whatever Brad is.
Yeah. I mean, just add them up.
35 years. All right. There you go.
35 years. Yeah. There you go.
Fair enough.
You go there, sign up. It's as little as $7 a month or $55 annually. You could cancel at any time. Not that you ever want to, because I've been a. Did I lose my Theriot Premium number, by the way?
What?
Why would I know this?
What are you talking about? Why would you have lost it?
I don't know. People are telling me that I don't have my number.
Let me tell you. I'm going to tell you what I tell everybody. Just if you have a problem, email to help at Theriot.com. Let me know, and I'll look into it. But I don't.
Somebody wrote to me. He's like, you're not number 24 anymore. That was my Theriot number.
Well, how do we do this? I don't know.
I don't know.
No. Why would you? You wouldn't have lost it.
Not that I pay for my Theriot Premium subscription. Sure. But I don't know. Somebody wrote that. But Theriot.com, my go-to site every morning. That's literally the first place I go to. And Paul
me
and
too.
Brad doing unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, luckily for
mostly I, just to make sure there's no spam. But yeah.
Absolutely love it. So go sign up there. So there's a lot to talk about. I'm going to go through some of this may be old, but I really there's a lot of stuff to discuss with this iPhone announcement last week. We did not do coverage. We did not do it. I was having the week from hell, so I decided this is the first time ever that I skipped out on it. But there's a lot.
We should have just covered it live.
We should have. We really should have done it live. I don't know why we didn't, but we should have. But yeah. The iPhone 12 launched with like 18 phones.
So this must have been, what, a week ago Tuesday?
Yeah. Yeah, last Tuesday.
Yeah. It seems like a long time ago.
I want to get your opinion on this because, you know, I have the iPhone 11 Max, right? The big one. Pro Max. I'm not upgrading.
I mean, no, you shouldn't. That's the thing. I mean, if you have one of last year's phones, I can't imagine why you would upgrade, but.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I am.
What are you getting? Which one?
I'm getting the normal iPhone 12.
Oh, you're not doing the big boy, the 6.7 inch?
No. So I have a really big problem, and literally a big problem with the iPhone Max, you know, the big ones. And so this is my last year's Max, and this thing is it's too wide. It's too tall. And it's too heavy. It's like a brick. And if you paid attention to the presentation that they did on Tuesday, they made a big point of how the iPhone 12 Pro is thinner, lighter, and smaller than the phone it's replacing. And that's probably true. It's not true of the Max. The new Max is actually bigger and it's heavier. It's crazy how much this thing weighs. It's like a lead brick.
Well, is it because of the battery?
I'm not 100% sure, but I basically, I care a lot about the camera. Obviously, it's something we should talk about. There are reasons to go pro if you care about photography. And once again, there's a reason to go with the Max because the big one gets some additional features, which really don't appreciate. But when I think about kind of day-to-day usage, and I should say too, I'm more of an Android guy than an iPhone guy. That doesn't mean I might switch and use it and be happy with it, and I'll just keep using it. Who knows? But God, you know, $1,150. It's like, I can't go that direction. It's just too much. So I do care about the photography stuff. It is very clear that the iPhone 12, just that version, which now has the screen that the Pro gets, same form factor, et cetera, is the sweet spot of this lineup, you know, and I'm going to see if it works for me. I think it's going to, I really do. I'm not buying this so I can return it and get another one. Like I really do believe that this will satisfy my needs, and I really do believe it's the best one for everybody. And so if you were buying the kind of the mid-level one, I will call it the normal 12, I feel like that and the mini, if you want a smaller screen, right, because it's the same phone, are much better deals than the Pro models this year.
So they have – and just look at this lineup, right? You can still buy the iPhone SE, XR. That's still for sale, right? Yeah. The XR is for sale. Then you got the iPhone
XR,
SE.
Just so people know, right? So the XR is what? Is the pre-iPhone 11. It's like the iPhone. They didn't have this, but it's the iPhone 10 is what that is.
Yeah.
So the XR is the iPhone 11, but a year earlier. So LCD display, 6.1 screen, pretty big bezels, you know, whatever. I guess aluminum body, I think.
What's the price on that now? Did they drop it?
You know what, by the way, if they still sold the 11 series, the Pros, it's possible the phone that I would have bought this year would have been a normal 11 Pro.
They like are just selling the 11. You
know, yeah, I know, but I don't want the 11. I want, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so here's how they've done this, right? You got the SE starting at $399, 4.7 inch display, A13 processor.
Big bezel, old-fashioned design. But
old-fashioned,
new stuff on the inside,
then you got the iPhone 11. A13, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt again, but just so people know, like one of the big things, like one of the important things that's happened this year is the iPhone XR and the iPhone 11 were LCD displays. And by the way, for LCD, excellent display.
Yeah, very good.
They're great displays. But this year they switched to OLED, and it's literally the same exact display that you get in the Pro. So smaller bezels, superior display, it's kind of really ratcheted up that part of the market. So when you look at like the new iPhones, you just mentioned the iPhone SE, it's the only old-fashioned one left that's new, you know, right? Because it has relatively new insides, and that's great. It's all good. But screen is tiny. It's also LCD, big bezels, you know, that old, you know, the iPhone 4 design, whatever. So they really modernized the rest of it, including giving people who like small screens a new choice. So anyway, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. So I want to run down, because it's interesting the angle that they've taken here, right? Because now they have, they start off at $399 and they go all the way to what, $11.99, $12.99 at this point?
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, it's a big variable, but you could tell that their attempt now is to saturate the market. It's no longer about the one iPhone that comes out every year. It's now about what iPhone suits you. The SE.
So they've also they've really weighted it toward the bottom, haven't they? I mean, iPhones will always cost more than most Androids. I mean, I know, you know, big Samsungs can cost just as much and so forth, but they're really putting the value part of it at the lower end for Apple. So, what's the starting price of the
SE?
The iPhone 12 mini.
To me, is $699, I believe.
Okay, so it's mid-level pricing, but
$700.
I mean, if you want, I know it's like it's almost twice as much, but if you wanted like a smaller display device, like that to me is such a more modern and acceptable.
But here's design, the thing here, right? Know? Here's the thing. Look at the price points, right? I mean, obviously, like I'm into photography, so I would buy not that I would want, but the 6.7 inch iPhone 12 Pro would be the one that I would get because it has the latest camera. If I was buying this, I'm not buying a new phone. The iPhone 11 that I have is perfectly fine, and I'm probably going to sit on this for a year or two. However, now when you look at this comparison here, for $399, the SE, let's compare to what else is on the market. For $599, let's compare the iPhone 11 to what else is on the market at that price point.
Okay.
$699, let's do that as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think the iPhone has an advantage here.
Well, yeah, it does. I mean, of course it does. I mean,
you have the ecosystem, you have the camera, you know it's going to be a good camera. Even on the iPhone SE, support. You know it's going to be a good camera.
Yeah. If you could put up with the smaller display and you don't mind the old-fashioned design, the inside of the iPhone SE is modern and will last for years and years. I mean, there's no doubt about it. In that price range, you know, there's a Google Pixel 4a that costs less, but is less phone for sure. It actually has a better camera though, because we're still at the other thing that iPhone doesn't stack up too well in that price range is the camera. It's a single camera. You can buy various Samsung phones, you know, A series phones, Moto phones. In that price range, it'd have 2, 3, 4, whatever lenses.
Okay, so
but yeah, but the iPhone has huge advantages for sure.
I'm on Verizon's website right now, and, and we'll talk about, you know, the insides and stuff. But I'm on Verizon's website. The Motorola One 5G UW is $549. Okay, that's $549. Now you got an iPhone XR. Okay, let me show you. It's all Apple. That's wild.
Yeah.
Samsung Galaxy S20 FE is $699. Mm-hmm. You got a Samsung 8.
By the way, just real quick, that's $699 price point. I think that's that sweet spot right in the middle, right? And that's iPhone hits it. Samsung's hitting it with that phone you just mentioned. Google hits it with the Pixel 5, but that's garbage, unfortunately. OnePlus is actually just a little north of there, I think. But that's kind of that 700. That's where the best.
Yeah,
you know, features, phones, whatever for the money. I think that's the sweet spot.
So as long as like, as far as like the $399 or $349 for the SE goes, your competition is cheaper than you by a little bit, but you could get a Galaxy A21, you could get a Galaxy A11 for $179, you could get a Pixel A4 for $379, which that would probably be the best one. Galaxy A51, which I don't know much about, $399.
Right.
You got a Motorola Z. So it really comes down to what are you going to buy? You're going into the store. You don't want to spend that much. What's the monthly going to be? It's going to be like $14 a month. Now you could buy an iPhone at that. Now you could buy an iPhone.
Well, let's see. That's the thing. Most people aren't walking into a Verizon store and plunking down $400 or $700 or whatever. They're adding it to their bill, right? And I think you can make a really good argument at that point, especially if you're going to hold on to this thing for 2 to 4 years and you're going to pay it off over 2 years. $699. I mean, actually, we could just do that. It would be easy to look. I mean, if you want to buy the iPhone Mini, the 12 Mini, right? You're like, well, look, I'm going to use this thing for years, so I don't mind paying for it over time. Like, what does that even look like? And I'm sorry, just slowly bringing up their website. Yeah, it's like $30 a month. I think that's where people are going to do, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird deal. I mean, I look, you could get I just got an offer from Google, a Google Pixel 4a, which is the really cheap one, which, you know, kind of middling specs at best, is $15 a month over 2 years, you know, cheap. Yeah. But, and Google is talking to me now.
Talking to you. See? It knows.
Yeah. Google, here's what I found on the web.
I feel like they have this tremendous range in pricing, and they don't care, and they're able to sell a $1,200 phone every year to some people because it's a monthly payment.
Well, listen,
people don't realize. It's actually funny because I was talking to my mother-in-law, and she bought the iPhone 11, you know, a couple months ago, and she's like, mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, you paid a lot for this. She's like, no, it's like whatever it is, $39-$49 a month. I was like, yeah, but that comes out to like $12,000.
Yeah.
She's like, right. Huh,
people don't think that far out.
Yep. I didn't even think.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, okay. I mean, interesting. Yeah. The other thing that's happening this year that's really worth mentioning, and this has been true of Samsung devices for a couple of years now, it's especially true of iPhones now. If you're in the market for an iPhone and you have an iPhone, like an existing iPhone, you're going to get way better on trade than you've ever gotten in the past. And that's not just from Apple. In fact, you might do better at your wireless carrier. This is one of the things that's really unique about this year. They're really pushing these upgrades. And if you go, you know, I'm talking United States. I'm not really sure what it's like.
Why do you think this is a big push?
Why do I think that is? I think it has to do with pushing the 5G thing, probably, because the benefit from the perspective of AT&T, T-Mobile, or Verizon is that these phones are really pushing 5G. I mean, if you looked at their press conference thing from last week and took out everything that was 5G related, it was like 7 minutes long. Like, this is all they talked about. And
is that important to you right now? Because for me, I got to tell you,
no, it's nonsense.
It's the least important feature because I'm getting 100 megabits a second on my phone.
This is the problem with 5G, and it's not the obvious problem. The obvious problem is it's not everywhere. The obvious problem is there's two kinds of 5G, and one of them you have to be standing in the exact spot at the right time of day, you know, with no cloud over the sun or something. You know, there's all this nonsense about that kind of stuff. But you'll find, like, reviewers have done this. They've gone to some special place in Bryant Park or somewhere in New York where somehow line of sight to space. They've got this incredible connection. Yeah. 5, they can 000. Download like a week's worth of Netflix shows in like 30 seconds. And they're like, look, that's the power of 5G. Yep. But you know what the problem with that is? No one has a truly unlimited data plan. So if you downloaded, like, I'm going to download the entire season of some Netflix show because I can, and it takes like 33 seconds, and you're like, oh my God, that was amazing. How much data did you just use? Like, you could suck up your monthly data plan in 33 seconds, you know? And that's the problem. Like, the promise of 5G is real, right? The reality of it is lacking, but it will get there, you know, in some places. But there's no such thing as unlimited anymore.
There's also a big, big marketing issue with the term 5G.
Yeah.
So, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about our viewers, right? Our viewers are a little bit more in the know.
For sure.
Yeah. Do you know how many people have said to me, I already have 5G?
Oh, yeah.
And I say, what do you mean? And they go, no. And when I connect to Wi-Fi, it says 5G. Because I'll give you an example. Standard Verizon Fios modems have whatever, and it says 2.4 instead of gigahertz.
It says G,
2.4 G, 2.5, and mine says 5G. People think they have it already.
Right.
they don't, and I'm like, no, it's not the same thing. It's different. We're talking fifth generation, not.
Well, it's also
gigahertz.
I mean, even if you're really on 5G, like actual cellular 5G. I mean, I finally experienced it when I went to North Carolina. It's slow. It's just not that, you know. So, yeah, I think this is really in service to the carriers. Look, it's going to get there. And look, we're also talking about buying a device. Don't buy the device today for 5G, right? But if you need a phone, understand that if you buy an iPhone, one of these new iPhones, not the SE, but all the other ones, part of that 5G capability is part of the future-proofness of it, right? So we know Apple's going to give you several years of software updates, so that's good. We know you're getting one of the best processors in mobile. That's going to work great for years to come. That's good. You know, today, 5G, but a year from now, 2 years from now, that might actually come to be more important to you. But I would look at the data usage stuff. I mean, I don't know. Like, what kind of plan do you have right now? What's your cellular plan?
So here's what sucks, right? Verizon has multiple unlimited plans.
Yeah. Oh, but unlimited
doesn't. Yeah. So
unlimited.
I have unlimited.
By the way, if they had unlimited, they would only have one because it would be unlimited.
So my phone, my wife's unlimited, is a better unlimited than my unlimited. My unlimited throttles my bandwidth depending on what I'm doing. So at times my bandwidth is absolute garbage, and I'm like, that doesn't make sense. I don't understand, because she's able to do it fine because her phone is allocated 720p bandwidth or whatever they do, and mine is just standard definition bandwidth, just like what T-Mobile used to do, which is nonsense. Right. It's really – I mean, that's such BS to do that, considering we're on the same family plan, but my phone is allocated a different whatever, which – listen, I could change it. It's fine. It's like $10 more a month, but – it's annoying. It's not really unlimited. And this, we've been talking about this for 10 years. Unlimited has never been unlimited.
Right.
For a very short period of time, maybe it was, but it's not truly
AT&T,
unlimited.
Had unlimited in the beginning with the iPhone, and then to get, I don't, maybe it was when it went to 4G or something.
Yeah, that's what it was.
You had to kill it. And I remember at the store, whatever the event was, it was probably 4G. But I remember I did this at the store, and the woman said to me, she goes, "Are you sure you want to do this?" And I said, "Well, I kind of have to." And she goes, "I feel like I'm killing a unicorn."
Oh my God.
Because it was one of the remaining actual unlimited plans.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So the big story for me here, obviously, listen, faster, quicker, whatever, typical iPhone thing. But the camera on the bigger iPhone 12 Pro is a very interesting story, because they have been able to do some stuff with this that really they didn't concentrate a lot of effort on. And I've seen some of these shots that, you know, honest reviewers have taken, and it's actually stunning.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I would say, though, is the standard iPhone 12, which has two lenses, right, wide and ultra wide, and 2x optical zoom. So, you know, same as we've had since iPhone 7 Pro Plus, whatever that was called, is awesome. You know, it's awesome. Yeah. I mean, ideally what you would have is a three camera system that also included a telephoto lens with true optical above 2x. And if you get the Pro, actually you still have 2x optical. It's like a 4x range, but it's in and out. So it's 2x in, 2x out.
Yeah,
and it's like it's not that big of an upgrade, but like you said, I mean, the Pro Max is kind of interesting because two of the lenses are different. I don't remember the exact details. I know the ultra wide is a little wider.
It's also a better quality ultra wide, because the ultra wide right now on this one is terrible.
Yeah, and that's something, right? Depending on the phone you have, I see this a lot with I'm using a Huawei phone right now. When you switch from wide to ultra wide, you can really tell. I mean, not just because you get an expanded view, but sometimes the quality is lower. The HDR might not be as good. The crispness, the clarity, the resolution could be different. That's not actually the case on iPhone. But you'll notice like a night mode won't work well, or it will work differently. You know, this is a big problem with depending on the smartphone. But there's also something like maybe you remember this better, because I'm doing this off the top of my head, but there's, they actually float one of the sensors for stability reasons. Yeah, so it's like
rather than the actual what was it? They showed it. The sensor normally moves, the image with stabilization with the camera. This,
so it works like a mini gimbal inside of the handset, I would say, is probably
how
it works.
Which, by the way, if you've ever, and this is a good experiment, if you have one of the newer iPhones, right? Mm-hmm. So, I took a video of this, and I was actually very impressed. My kids were on the bar, and we were listening to Van Halen, right, when Eddie passed away.
Yep.
So we had Van Halen playing, just sitting at my bar, and my kids are just rocking out. They're doing, you know, the devil horns and everything. They're doing the whole thing.
Sure.
And the appropriate response. I did one of these.
Yeah.
And I was just recording them. When I went back and watched it, it was almost like my phone was on a gimbal.
They do a nice, good. Yeah, yeah.
And this is even.
And by the way, this is video, and that's this is the iPhone photography stuff took a big leap last year. The still photos are excellent across the board. They really kind of got up into the top tier. But one of the things iPhone still does way better than any Android phone is that video stuff. And you'll see a lot of footage of people like walking through a park or something. And, you know, you walk, so you're kind of bouncing. I bounce a lot because I'm a big goofball. But, yeah, the iPhone does like, yeah, it's like a software gimbal thing, and it's amazing. And I think, I mean, I don't have one, but I mean, I would imagine the 12 Pro Max, that probably does an amazing job of that, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah. So.
Listen, yeah. It, you know, bigger, faster, better, you sure. know? We're at that point, but now the big question is, okay, so I'm getting 800 messages right now, like everything, it's always at 2 o'clock, okay, always at 2 o'clock. Sure. Something happens and everybody decides, I think Andrew's on the air.
Yeah, let's
ask him the most complicated questions. Like, how do I install this certain right. app on my phone and log in? Right. Do you remember my password? And this isn't even my wife asking me this.
Or you get a text and it says something like, hey, what's the best way to put out a grease fire?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
like, pretty much. And it's from someone in your house?
Yeah.
Anywho.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So, now the big question is, okay, so I think we've reached the limit with this. And some of these features were interesting, and it's kind of telling about the next generation of the iPhone. The MagSafe stuff is interesting to me, that they've yeah. incorporated it inside of the phone, and they have all these accessories now and all that stuff, right? That's so, very telling on where they're headed.
Thank you. I was going to say, you understand the big news there is not that we have MagSafe like cases and stuff and the stupid wallet thing, which, you know, is going to fall off in your pocket. It's what does this mean to the platform and what does this mean for the future? And I think what this means to the future is there's not going to be a port on the bottom of this thing. Everyone who's like, oh, when is Apple going to switch to USB-C? I think the answer is never, right? That the next, I mean, I'm not saying it will be next year, but whenever they do make the switch to the next thing will be wireless. There's not going to be a plug. And by the way, if you want, no, this is not going to be a plug. I think that's how it's going to work. They'll sell you like a little disc, which will attach directly to where it needs to be, which is cool. By the way, that's a nice little feature that someone should have figured out years ago, but that's cool. You know, today you get like a cable. Next year, the year after that, you're just going to get a disc, and the disc will have a USB-C yep. hole on it, and you can use whatever cable you have and just use that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, no more. I don't know how I felt about eliminating any kind of physical, you know, plug for this, but now we're in this.
Right.
That's where we're at right now. No more ports.
Yeah. And by the way, it's good. It's good for so many things, right? One of the things my wife and I are literally struggling with, and this is not like an existential thing or anything, but, you know, we have like a semi-older vehicle now. It doesn't have modern electronics inside. We need some way to mount a phone, you know, blah, 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 whatever. And I researched this stuff, and like the very best way to do this is to get a system where you have like you have a magnet in the case. So you have to have a special case, and then you have a magnet, and that's what holds it the best. And I'm like, I'm not putting magnets on my phones. It's stupid. What if it was built into the phone? Right. Yeah. And so these new iPhones would just work with these mounts in a car automatically. That's excellent.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing, excellent. Right? Here's the other thing. Great question. Chad. No ports. How are you going to connect it to CarPlay in the car? All it's going to be, instead of a Thunderbolt end, it's going to be a MagSafe end and USB on the other side.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Or just that, wireless. But,
or
but yeah, wireless, I mean, it's... But,
which, by the way,
well,
sucks.
Cars
the wireless
today
stuff
have...
Sucks,
what's that?
The wireless feature on the iPhone from...
Yeah,
the
okay.
Car,
but,
not good.
But that's something that, frankly, should work fine. I mean, I use Bluetooth in a car all the time to play audiobooks and music and stuff.
The question is, can data come across MagSafe? That's my question.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I'm sure they're going to figure it out, that they'll find a way.
Sure. Look, all I'm saying is this year it's the first step of the transition. You know how Apple is. Like Apple puts a the ultra wideband chip in their some device. They don't use it for anything. People are like, why is it there? We don't know. It's for something that's coming down the road. And this thing, it requires like special cases. Okay. There's no leather case, by the way, yet. I guess that's coming later. That kind of blows. That's the type of thing I usually buy right up front. I kind of like the leather cases. But, you know, the ability to transmit power through a case to a wireless charger, cool. Yep. The magnet thing, smart. Keeps it in the right position, nice. But really, this is about the future. And, you know, who knows? I don't know if it's yet next year or the year after, but
it's got to be something. But here's the other thing, right? Since they got this thing on the back, it's telling that we are going to get Touch ID again built into the screen.
Oh, interesting.
That's how I see this, because they were able to put this thing incorporated in the back of it, and it didn't really affect the size. I mean, maybe a tiny bit. I mean, for the most part, didn't affect the size. It's seamless now. That was a big problem when they went to Face ID. I got to tell you, I don't like Face ID.
Really?
I don't like it. And especially, and I'll tell you why. I know that it works with the masks now, but if you're moving with a mask, it doesn't really work well. So if I'm doing these and I'm walking, I can't unlock the phone. It's constantly failing.
I don't use an iPhone full time, but I would say of the phones I have that have some kind of facial recognition, it's the best one.
Oh, by far, it's the best one. But I like the Touch ID. I always like the Touch ID.
Yeah, OnePlus. It's weird because there are phones on the Android side that do really good in-screen fingerprint readers, but they're kind of weird, esoteric phones like OnePlus or Huawei, which can't even get in the United States anymore. Samsung stuff is terrible. One that's gone. Shockingly bad. God, but it's terrible. It's just, I don't know.
So, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, right now they're at the end of life, I would say, for this device. This wasn't, if you think about when this phone came out with this design, this was a reactionary device. The whole notch thing was not by Apple coming up with this beautiful new elegant design. It was crap, we can't incorporate Touch ID in the screen.
My God, they've stuck with it. Like, if you pay attention to phones, you know that on the Android side, there were phones with notches like this. There aren't really, because now they're like the notch got smaller and smaller. It disappeared. There's like pinhole camera things now, and it kind of is gone. You know, Apple, I mean, they haven't moved it a millimeter.
What drove me nuts is the amount of people that defended this thing. Like,
well, they still are. They're like, I don't even notice it anymore. Like, well, you know what you would notice? If you had another quarter inch of screen. Because you would.
It wasn't Apple saying like, well, we're going to be very creative and create this beautiful display. It was, oh, crap, we screwed up. We need to come up with an answer. This is the best case scenario. And because they're one of the best marketing, there's nobody in history that has better PR than this company. That they convinced millions upon millions of people that cutting into your display is a normal thing.
Yeah. And then because they're Apple, they just stick with it, you know?
Yeah. And everybody
it's unchanged for years, you know? Because, I mean, most people were like, surely they're going to make this thing smaller, less tall, you know, whatever. And nope, they haven't moved it at all. So I don't know, but you know, again, Apple, because of the way they do things, what will happen is next year or the year after that, it will just disappear. It's not at this point. I think we all have to all kind of agree. They're not going to make a smaller notch now. They're just going to get rid of it. Like, that will be the next step. And oh my God, the marketing of this, you know, remember how we talked about having an all screen display in 2018 or 19 or whatever it was.
Okay.
Now we really do.
And so we'll see what happens. What do you think it's going to be? You think we're going to get this radical new design with the next version, or you think they're going to it's a slow progress and not really leaping into a new thing?
No, I think we're going to have, well, it's Apple. We just talked about this. So they've moved the iPhone back to that iPhone 4, iPhone 5 kind of industrial design, which I think everyone agrees is a classic. You know, Steve Jobs at the time, remember, he referred to it as like looking like a Leica camera, you know?
Yeah.
From back in from the 70s or something. Yeah. Okay, great. They did that with iPad Pro. They did it recently with the iPad Air. And if you look at like an iPad Air or an iPad Pro, you can see there's no notch on those devices. So there's your hint of what the next iPhone will look like. So I think they stick with this design for, you know, several years now. We're talking 4 or 5 years again. And I think at some point next year, certainly the year after, the notch just disappears. And that will give it a really fresh look too. And it will be an interesting incitement for, because a lot of people are going to upgrade now just because it's going to this design. I think it's so classic. I think a lot of people look forward to that.
Yeah.
But my God, when they get rid of the notch, that's going to be another wave of upgrades right there.
Yeah.
And all those people who defended it, you know, they're like, well now, I'm definitely getting this thing, you know?
So we'll see what happens. So there was no news on the laptops on the Apple chipset.
Supposedly November,
November, so we're going to get that. So a lot of people have asked me questions about that and what I think about it. My whole thing is, you know, I never buy a first-gen device. I think that's a bad idea. There's going to be a lot of surprises. I'm curious how long they've had this tested in the wild amongst their staff.
Right.
My big question is, how are you going to replace the Pro lineup?
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to convince people that this is as good as Intel? Or it's possible that it is. Honestly, it's very possible that they've pulled it off.
Look, we're going to look back on this and either just wonder how it is we fell for this marketing yet again, or we're going to say, man, they really were onto something. I really don't know where it's going to land. All I know is this stuff on Windows is terrible. It's terrible.
That's what I was going to say. So nobody's been able to do this yet.
Yeah, it just doesn't work.
And that's a little bit of a problem. Yep. Generally, Apple changed the smartphone market, but they didn't invent it. It wasn't an Apple thing. They were able to take, you know, the first iPhone was not that great. I think people don't realize it. There was no App Store. It wasn't great. The concept was still not so, but the thing was, it looked better than most phones. So people jumped on it. They don't have that luxury now because the aesthetics, everybody makes beautiful products at this point. You know, sure. The PC market has caught up to the MacBook Airs.
Well, it's a different thing today. You have to, this has to do what the other ones did. You can't introduce a laptop and say, hey, this does 70% of what your other laptop does, but the performance is terrible, and it gets really good battery life.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, wait, what? Like, it has to literally be an upgrade for this to make sense.
I don't know if it will be.
I know.
I don't know. I don't know. And I don't think they're that... I mean, listen, I don't know what their user base is. You know, I don't want to insult the Apple user base. I use a MacBook, but I don't know. Do they care?
I think they care. You got to remember, this is a group of people that had been abused for 5 years-ish with those terrible butterfly keyboards, which, by the way, might be coming back on this.
I'm using one right now. It's absolutely terrible.
They're terrible. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of sensitivity there. This is also a user base that suffered through several years of no Mac Pro upgrades, right? Remember that? And then, you know, this feeling that Apple had kind of abandoned the Mac a little bit because they were focusing on the devices and what's going on and why, you know. So, yeah, I think there's a little raw there, you know, a little sensitivity. So, look, we all fall for this marketing. I mean, every time they introduced anything, it's this, it's that, it's blah, 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 it's the best ever. It's like getting a new Mac in your Mac, you know. We'll see. I can't wait to find out. I mean, I'm just curious. All I know is on the Windows side, Qualcomm and Microsoft have not figured this out.
So what's going on with that? Is it on the Qualcomm side or is it on Microsoft side where the software is not refined enough?
I can't blame. Well, actually, yes, of course I can. I mean, I would say it's a little of both. But again, I'm not laying blame like, oh, these idiots at, you know, Microsoft and or Qualcomm. I don't mean it like that. These are chips that were designed for very specific purposes. Now, my iPhone thinks I just said Siri and I didn't. So you can stop doing that. they are being contorted to do this thing they weren't designed to do. And so it requires some concessions on the software side. We have to adapt it for these chipsets. It requires some concessions on the hardware side. We have to kind of adapt the chipsets to better handle the types of workloads that PCs do. So they've been doing it slowly, but the reason I would blame Microsoft ultimately is they released it as a product before it was ready, like years before it was ready. And now they have new generation chips that they have like a slower version of it. This is a thing that's already slower than everything on the market. And they're releasing slower versions of the chips for some reason, I guess for lower cost computers, because that's one of the other problems. These things are actually pretty expensive. So you get like a computer that's not compatible with all the software you run.
Yeah.
It gets the other good thing. Battery life.
On the Apple side, we don't really know what they're doing on the software side fully yet. You know,
we don't know what they're doing on either side. I mean,
the hardware side, we understand it's gonna be a new chipset. It's gonna be that, but what are they doing on the software side to make this thing work? And
look,
is it enough?
I don't know. I would say I don't work at Apple, okay, but I think when Apple did the Mac App Store, that was actually a step in this direction, because one of the points of this store, as it was with the similar store we have in Windows, was to provide this trusted place where these apps would have some characteristics that could be guarantees of sorts. You're not going to get an app from the Mac App Store that's going to dog down your computer. You know, like these things have to kind of work properly and so forth. So I'm sure that will play a role here, that, you know, you're going to get the best experience from apps from the Mac App Store. That will probably be one of their promises. But it's, you know, these are still desktop apps. These are still things that can kind of run, do whatever they want to do to your system. And you can download any app you want. I mean, will the Mac version of Chrome run acceptably fast in this new environment? I don't know.
Yeah.
I have questions. I don't know if I'd like to, but there's a part of me that believes like maybe they're going to pull it off. You know, why else would they be talking about it like this? Like, you know, the sane thing to do would say, look, this is a transition. So over some period of years, we're going to start with the low-end devices. We're going to start with a MacBook because it's already, you know, we were already using like a Y series or M, whatever it was, garbage chip. That will be just as good as it was before. And then we'll move our way up the line. We'll do MacBook Air next. We'll do a Mac Mini and we'll see what happens. I mean, but they're going to have to do something really serious on the hardware side to get pro class performance, not to mention GPUs and all that stuff. I don't know. I have no idea how they're going to do this. Plus, it has to run emulated software.
Yeah. Tons of it. I mean, everything.
Yeah, all of it. I mean, 100% of it. So I don't know. No,
actually, what are they going to do? Well, I guess if it's an iOS app, they wouldn't be.
Okay. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, Mac software. Yeah. Sure. The iOS. Yeah. Your iPad apps will run natively on a Mac. Yeah. That's great.
Safari, but your iPhone apps, your Photos app, your iMessage. I don't know. I find that we're in a very confusing state right now. We're in that next.
Because all we have is what they've said.
Well, November, we're
there's
gonna find
not,
out
not a person
weeks.
In the world has ever gone on YouTube and said, this is what it's doing. This is how it compares to what we're running now. It's plus or minus and blah, blah, blah. We don't have even a single example of it. So
no. Well, what they'll do is compare it to Qualcomm. They'll compare it to what Microsoft is doing with all the other Qualcomm-based PCs they're doing, and they're going to blow them through the water. They're going to say, look, we're running the same application on both platforms, and look how much better ours is. That's it. That's right.
Yep.
It's going to be
that's going to happen. Sure.
Unbelievable PR, man.
That's fine. We can expect that, but I'm still curious what the problems are going to be, right? Right now we've heard nothing about the asterisks at the end of the sentence. You know, some of your software is not going to work. Your drivers aren't going to work. The blah, blah, blah. There's going to be stuff that just doesn't work. It has to be. It's a completely different architecture.
It's a Mac. What drivers do you need?
Okay.
What do you need drivers for? Printers? Who uses printers? What is this, 1996?
Fair enough.
Right? What else? You need a scanner, Paul? Scanners? Sure. Who's scanning anything? That's that's what they're going to say. It's interesting to me. I find it very interesting. I find the whole thing very interesting.
Me too.
I'll tell you, man, what a bizarre holiday season we're going to have with New Macs, new phones, new consoles,
Xboxes
out
and
there,
PlayStations,
and nobody has a job.
I know.
It's what a strange moment to release all these things. Like, listen, people are just chugging along. They're hoping for the best. It's interesting. You know, I wanted to ask your opinion on this, and because I haven't had time to look into it, but the Google antitrust stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've written about it yet. I really want your opinion on it, because this is something we've discussed for many years about how you know, Microsoft's antitrust issues were you know, was a great example of an example being made, and it really changed Microsoft's path in the 2000s, especially. You know, they became a very different company because of this. And Google, for many, many years, has somewhat been allowed to acquire these companies and to get bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, for good and
bad.
By the
way, that itself is a really good point. That Google has a monopoly is, in this case, in internet search. Literally, three of my phones just lit up when I said that.
Yeah.
Anyway, is obvious, right, and true. They do. Okay, you can stop. Please stop talking to me. Why are these things doing this? Anyway.
They don't do that to me. They don't like me.
It's been weird today. It's like my phones are haunted or something. Anyway, yes. But, yeah, by the way, how do I say this? So I'm going to mix these up. It was the House Judiciary Committee. So before the DOJ sued Google for abusing its monopoly power, a House Judiciary Committee issued an amazing, I think it's like 460-page, it wasn't just a paper about big tech and how they all have monopolies and how they abuse them.
Yeah.
And one of the things they called out correctly, and I did not expect this, it was amazing, was really the problem lies with the U.S. government, because they've allowed this stuff to happen. Like, how do you, when Google comes to you and says, we want to buy AdSense, AdSense, how do you allow that to happen? You've just handed them a monopoly. You know, Facebook should never have been allowed to buy WhatsApp and Instagram. You know, it's like this lack of regulation has been part of the problem. Like, we've been just saying yes to everything. So that one of their recommendations was to overhaul antitrust law, and specifically to look at some of these big acquisitions, and in the future to make sure there's a higher bar for those acquisitions for big tech companies, but also maybe even to look at the current acquisitions that have already happened and say, maybe we need to reverse these. So that's kind of interesting. But with regards to the DOJ specifically, which this week sued Google, they're focusing on the low hanging fruit. So it's just one topic. It's just one type of abuse. It's search abuse. It is, they have an amazing, given the limited scope, they've only been at this for 15 months. They're not going after Google's other abuses, et cetera. They've got a lot of good data, and Google's defense is interesting because it so closely parallels what Microsoft did in the early days of their antitrust thing. And they're like, what we do benefits the world. People choose Google because they love Google, not because they have to, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, wow. I don't think so. We'll see. But yeah, so just so people understand, I mean, Google is the gatekeeper to the internet for approximately 90% of the people who use the internet, which is 90% of the world. So it gives them a unique power. And one of the things that they do here,
right? Not that I'm defending Google or I'm picking a side here, but I'm throwing a hypothetical. Google antitrust, is it a monopoly if the perception is that this is the best service? The reason why Google became the number one search provider was that they were the best search provider. That's the only reason why they were in when they showed up. How many other search providers were out there? They were the best ones, not because of them buying their competition. Do they do some shady practices? 100%. There's definitely a discussion for this.
Yeah, there is. So this is what Microsoft argued, by the way, as well. Like, we have the best product. What's the problem? The problem is not that Google has a monopoly, which they do. I don't believe that the DOJ argued that Google achieved its monopoly illegally, which, you know, would be a problem. The problem is that they're maintaining and extending their monopoly illegally. So, for example, Google pays Apple, I think it's somewhere in the $17 to $19 billion a year rate or some huge amount of money. It might even be more than that. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. But they pay Apple, which is the number one maker of phones in the United States, right? They actually, there are more iPhones sold than all Android phones combined in the United States. They actually have like 55% usage share or market share or whatever. They pay to be the default search engine on iOS.
Yeah.
Like a huge sum of money. And so Google, their response to this is like, you know, the complaint is like, well, hold on a second. Microsoft, which owns Bing, and what was the other one? Yahoo. Both also pay to be featured in iOS. And so what we're doing is no different than what they're doing. Yes, it is. First of all, you're paying a lot more, not to be featured, but to be the default. You're already a monopoly, and you're paying to make sure those guys don't get the top spot.
Yeah.
That's the illegal maintenance and extension of your monopoly. That's what's illegal. It's illegal because you're a monopoly. If all three of you were paying the same amount of money to Apple, to be featured on the iOS, that would not be illegal.
Yeah.
But you're literally paying to be better positioned than the other two. Now, to your point, would most people imagine there was no default, right? That the first time you tried to search for something, Apple threw up a little screen and said, here are the different companies you can choose from. And they were alphabetical, they were randomly arrayed or whatever it was. Would most people choose Google? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I bet 90-something percent of them would, actually, right? So why are they paying? You know, like the problem is like you can make the argument, and you'd be correct, that Google, by the way, Google doesn't just have the biggest search engine. They have the best search engine. You could argue, and I think you'd be wrong, but you could argue that the reason they're the biggest is because they're the best. What antitrust kind of tells us is that the problem with that line of thinking is we'll never know what the best is if the biggest is paying to always be the biggest, because they're killing innovation that can't occur because the barrier to entry into this market is so high,
unsustainable,
that no one can afford, even Microsoft, which by the way is a bigger company than Google, right, can't compete in this market effectively. This is the barrier to entry problem. So Google ensures it's number one on Android phone, which it, you know, sort of controls. It ensures it's number one on iOS, which is the other dominant platform. They are ensuring that they are extending their search monopoly from the web on desktop to mobile, which is now the biggest computing platform. And that's illegal. That's the problem.
See,
so we'll never know. We'll never know if a better search engine could ever exist because they're ensuring it can't.
Here's the reality. Google got to where they are, not because of a monopoly or antitrust behavior. It was due to their service being better than everybody else's. Great example, Gmail. Gmail is the best example of this.
Okay.
Before Gmail,
yeah,
I don't think people realize how terrible email storage in the cloud was. That's what really drove people to Gmail.
Listen, I'm not going to argue this. I you're right. I mean, that's fine. But the problem is Google is, and this is not part of the DOJ suit, although this will be part of other lawsuits that will come down the road, both from the DOJ, from U.S. states, and in the EU. The problem is that Google, which has achieved this monopoly and is a gatekeeper to the internet, now knows what people are searching for and can offer up services that cut out third-party services that at that time were in fact better than anything Google had, but you never heard about them, because Google never let you find out about them, because Google only is pushing their own services. So yeah, I mean, as the years go by, you can make this argument, like, yeah, Gmail is you know, it's better than whatever else is out there. And it is in some ways, of course it is. But the way they got there, and the fact that now you and I were like, hey, you know, there's this email thing that we need to solve. Let's start a little, we'll do a little startup, and we'll make email, and we'll fix it. We're going to fix email. Can't, it's not going to work. There's too much. These players are all established. This market is unassailable. So it's the problem with big tech, and this is, you know, the problem. The problem isn't the people like, yeah, but you know, Google Maps works great. Like, why, you know, I don't need this other thing, or Gmail works great. I don't, you know, yeah, but because these things are so humongous, there is no incentive for anyone to even bother. And they would be killed if they tried, because Google is a gatekeeper to the internet. Yeah. They will prevent you and I and our Bob company, or whatever we call it, from even existing, let alone succeeding. It doesn't matter how good our ideas are. We can never bring them to market because they literally are a gatekeeper.
On a whole different side, right? That's not part of this. A lot of conversation has been going around Section 230 of the Communication Decency Act, right?
Yeah.
This kind of plays into that. When you are, and forget about the side, forget about the left or right or whatever. I am very much against censorship in any capacity. I'm not advocating hate speech or any kind of violence. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a provider like Google deciding that they're not going to show something because they, as a company, do not believe that is accurate, or they as a company, it doesn't fit their standards. Right. That is a problem when you are saying that it should be an equal playing field. Right? That's where the problem is. So I think this is all tying in. If we're talking about,
I mean, that's
this is where
right.
this is tying in.
The problem is that kind of thing is a bigger issue for companies like Facebook, although Google probably is in the mix there as well. The problem is, belatedly, what we've come to understand is that by allowing hate speech and misinformation and all the nonsense that's online, conspiracy theories, whatever, outright lies, to propagate, we have created an electorate that is misinformed and thus are not voting in their own best interest. You know, like, one of the most important things about the internet is its ability to disseminate information, and that we as consumers on one level, but let's say the electorate on another level, can be easily informed about the topics that matter to us so that we vote accordingly and our government acts on our behalf. But we're not doing that because we've been misinformed. And there's a huge percentage of this population that has no freaking idea what it's talking about, and they're going to vote. Yeah. And they're going to vote for stupid. And I'm sorry, but that is literally usurping democracy. So, yeah, I guess no censorship is like the ideal, but the reality is, for our country to survive, for us as a people to survive, literally survive, something has to change. So I don't have the answer to that. I don't know what that means, some form of regulation. But again, I think ultimately,
it's a very complicated scenario.
It's like people are like, less government is always better. You know, is it?
Listen, I want a great example. Okay. I'm going to give you, and this is on a whole different level.
Yeah.
If we are discussing, and I'm not going to say it right now because Google may or may not demonetize this video, but the illness that's happening around the world right now.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, the Trump virus. Yeah.
Yeah. The illness.
Yep.
If every time I write that on Twitter, get my account. If I write that, the illness's full name on Twitter.
Really?
I get I need to verify that it's me on Twitter. And it does it for all the social media accounts that I manage. So what happened, over the summer, I lost two of my accounts that I don't log into. Because what happened was, I wrote, remember when I got sick a couple months ago?
Mm-hmm.
When I got sick, I wrote that I tested negative for it. I didn't log into Twitter for 2 days. And when I logged back in, it said that I need to verify that I'm using it because it was suspicious activity. Hmm. And I was like, huh, that's weird. Okay, what did I do? I clicked okay, and then I realized it happened to every single one of my accounts that I've ever logged in with this IP address.
Jeez.
I was like, okay, that's a glitch. Cannot happen. 2 weeks ago, it happened again. I wrote it. I made a joke about people, the stupid people that believe that 5G causes that illness.
All right.
And I had my account, same thing happened. That's, it's frustrating. Yeah. It's frustrating, and it's a whacked out algorithm, but I think that's a problem. Yeah. And that's a problem that they will come up with a solution for. Obviously, forget about the climate is ridiculous, but.
Yeah. Okay.
What are we talking about?
Yeah. What's the point?
If that's happening, I find that to be an issue.
Okay.
That I can't monetize my video if we mention this. See, that's my issue with some of this. Obviously, listen, I'm not for at all for anything hurtful or any kind of
sure.
any kind of post or websites that could cause any kind of, you know, serious damage to this country or any of our rights or anything like that. I'm not screaming for government control. I'm not also screaming that the government should never do anything. It really has to do with tech companies and the maturity of tech companies. We're still in a very immature level for technology.
Well, yeah,
this is all new.
By the way, so part of the problem, the notion that the law cannot keep up with the pace of technology is not new. This is probably something they dealt with in the 1800s when the railroads made it all the way across to the other coast and, you know, airplanes happened and whatever. So we're still kind of dealing with this kind of age-old problem, but it's very real. And in the same way that these big tech companies maybe shouldn't have been allowed to expand as rapidly as they did, and now we're in a position where, you know, they're richer than most countries. And we're looking at a few, you've seen the movie Alien, right? There are no more countries. Yeah. It's all companies now, you know, Wayland Corp, all that stuff. I mean, it's like, it's, you know, we're kind of careening toward this future. So I know that this kind of thing always freaks some people out, but I really feel like these companies need to be regulated to some degree so that the behavior you're describing is not something that Twitter made up on the spot because they had to respond to a thing and it kind of careened out of control. And now it's infecting this person that doesn't have anything to do with the problem, but maybe there needs to be some kind of a standard that occurs at a higher level than the company, you know, that all companies have to adhere to.
Yeah.
So like the GDPR in Europe for data protection and privacy, you know, we need things like that here, you know, so that free speech is protected, but, you know, it's like the yelling fire in a movie theater thing. I mean, yeah. we have free speech, but we also can't use speech to cause harm to others. I feel like Isaac Asimov solved this problem with robots.
Did he? Is that the robot?
Yeah, the law of robotics, you know, they had to kind of fine tune it over time because there were all the little loopholes. I don't know.
And it's not no fix for this overnight. No. This is going
to
be
there's not even a fix like everyone would agree to. It's like, it's not like someone's going to say something really smart and everyone's like, oh yeah.
Oh, that's it. You know what?
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I'm going to cross the aisle. That's great.
You never know that. Listen, I think it's a tech immaturity thing. The way we use technology. Yeah. I always say this in 20, 30 years, we're going to look back at this and say, my God, we were idiots.
This is going to be like when you watch an old movie in black and white and everyone's smoking and there's like a cloud of smoke in the top of the frame the whole time. And you're like, my God, didn't they know that this was horribly, and you know, they did or they didn't, I don't know, but we're going to look back at the same thing and be like, seriously?
I always say that to people, we're in a very immature level of technology. This phone, this concept, is only what, less than 20 years old.
Yeah.
Internet as we know it, you know, the social media age of the internet is 10 years old to 15 years old, let's say 15 years old. We are in the infancy of this, and what we know today and the way we perceive the internet today is going to be drastically different in 20 to 30 years. Whether it's going to be for the good or for the bad, we don't know yet. We don't know the direction this is headed. What I'm saying is what we have today is going to be a very, you know, everybody, I was talking to someone that is very smart guy. And he was talking about, you know, just like even in the 90s, how we use the internet. And he said, because, you know, honestly, it's not so much different than today. But now we've hit the critical point of it's become mainstream.
It's no longer about
Paul, you, and myself and the 100 people that are watching this that have very strong opinions on this. It's now about everybody else.
It's everybody, yeah. So, I saw a comedian who was joking about people hopping on their phones to review a restaurant, you know, and he's like, why would you do that? He's like, wait, does the world really need to know your fine-honed opinion about your one-time experience at a restaurant you're now never going to visit again because randomly you had a bad experience? Like, what makes you think that your opinion is so valuable that it needs to be out there in the world, you know? And the funny thing is, like, the problem is, like, it's a mainstream activity now.
Yeah.
That used to be, you know, professionals did this. Like, this was someone's job at a paper or something, you know, like this is what they did for a living. Like, they made money doing it. And, you know, and so this is kind of a neat thing. It's like, everyone gets to publish their opinion online. There's some positives to that for sure. But then, you know, everyone knows when you go to Amazon to buy something, you got to look at some of the reviews and realize like a lot of those one-star reviews have something that was them or it was about the shipping of the product, which has nothing to do with the quality of the thing. You know what I mean? Like, people are, you know, a lot of people are not that smart. You know, maybe, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fascinating. Yeah. Anyway, time to wrap it up. Paul, thank you so much for joining me, as always. It's always a pleasure. Do you got 10 minutes to do a little post-show?
10 minutes? I have 10 minutes, Andrew.
Okay, perfect. We got 10 minutes. Excellent. If you're watching this, stay tuned. We're going to do a little bonus show. Well, hang on. I don't know what we're going to talk about. Whatever pops in my mind. That's the beautiful thing about this bonus show on Patreon. Patreon.com/whatthetech. You can go there, sign up. And that's it for this week. We'll be back next week. We'll see you all next time. Take care.